Sustainable Hour.
Good morning, listeners. Welcome to the Sustainable Hour on 94.7 The Pulse. We'd like to acknowledge that we're broadcasting from the land of the Wathaurong people, and we'd like to pay tribute to their elders, past, present, and those that are to come. We hope that we can learn to nurture the land half as well as they did for millennium, and we acknowledge the great work that One Fire is doing in Geelong for reconciliation.
Stop. Look. Listen. Think. Act.
Mick, you've got us intrigued. What's happening?
I wrote a blog post with these five words. The first four of them I think most people have heard before. But the act part, let's talk about how we act. I must say, this post was a long post with all the headlines that have come out just in the last weeks when we talk about climate change. There's so much going on, and nobody seems to be talking about it. And it's lucky I have this blog, and we have a radio show here where we can sort of vent, because sometimes you just get frustrated that there's all this news, you know, kilometers of news, and nobody's talking about it. I don't understand it. I just don't understand it.
But Mick, I've got to hand it to you. That blog the other day was, you're on fire. It would be not one of the best, the best you've done.
In terms
of information that you gave to people, well worth checking out.
Thank you very much, because, you know, it is, I do put it there to share it. You know, I hope that those people will go in, climatesafety.info, the blog, and look at what's going on at the moment. I actually put two blog posts. I split it up in two. So one is the Stop, Look, Listen, Think, Act blog, which is about climate change and all, you could say, the doomy, gloomy stuff. It's not looking good at all at the moment. We are on track to the 3 degrees warming globally, and that's not good news for people who live near the sea. Let's put it that way, just in short. But there's also lots of good news happening. So I made a second blog post, which is about all the fantastic things that are happening, for instance, in the renewable energy space. I mean, can you believe it? In Germany, the other weekend, there was so much wind, and they now have so many wind turbines, that the electricity company was giving away energy for free. Energy for free.
Yep.
And look at the news coming from South Australia now. We have all this debate in the federal parliament about, oh, electricity is getting too expensive, we need more coal, blah, blah, blah. It's a lie. Look at what's happening in South Australia. Now prices are going down. Why? Because of renewable energy. These are facts. So it's all out there in the second blog. You know, if you want to get all the good news and really understand that there's so much good stuff happening, you don't have to go into despair. We are not on track to the below 2 degrees that they talked about in the climate, the Paris Accord and all that. But if we get our act together now, we can still make it. We've got to have that attitude towards it.
Well, last week we talked about there being two countries left who hadn't signed the Paris Accords, the US and Syria.
Yeah.
Now, Syria, in their wisdom, in the midst of a civil war, has signed on. So that leaves Donald Trump's insane country, or sorry, a country led by someone who seems to be insane, the only country who hasn't. So I think that says a lot.
Well, the sanity in what Trump is doing is that he wants to protect the coal industry, for instance. So he's actually directly subsidizing it again, giving billions of dollars over of taxpayers' money over to the coal industry. Yeah. And it's very similar to what's happening here, you know, when the government, the federal government, is saying it wants to hand over $1 billion of Australian taxpayers' money to build a railway line so that we can export some coal, so that Adani, an Indian company, can export some coal to India and other places. And, by the way, wreck our climate and the Great Barrier Reef.
And this is at a time when India's getting out of coal.
But
so
you know,
believe that one.
It's just so incredibly insane. But you know who said the best speech? I think I would declare this is the best speech I've heard in 2017. This is the speech of the year. And it was a musician. The lead singer of Midnight Oil gave a speech in the what's it called, the National Press Club
in Canberra. Yeah, last
and it
week.
Was broadcast live on ABC, and I was stunned. I mean, he just said exactly what needs to be said. He spoke for 35 minutes live on ABC. Wonderful. Unfortunately, I don't think it's there anymore. They only keep it for about 2 weeks. It's 2 weeks ago now already, so they took it off yesterday from the ABC iView website and so on. But let's just hear to 1 minute of what he was saying, because he totally said, we don't have to say anymore. Peter Garris said it all.
I believe this is the most critical address that I've given here. After many years of working both outside and inside the system, in inverted commas, I'm convinced more than ever that we face an existential threat greater than any other as humans literally upend the world's climate and natural ecosystems. To do nothing in the face of this threat, of which we're well aware, is to acquiesce to a world diminishing in front of us. We will deservedly reap the scorn and anger of our children if we fail to act now. There's a fundamental divide in our response, but it's not between insiders and outsiders. It's between those willing to act and those clinging desperately to an empty, corrupted ideology, unwilling to open their eyes or their hearts to what's happening around them. Regardless of our day jobs and our status in the political firmament, it still boils down to one basic proposition. Are we part of the problem or part of the solution?
Which, in a way, is exactly what we have been saying in the Sustainable Hour for about 4 years now, isn't it, Tony? Are you part of the problem or are you part of the solution? And we are certainly part of the solution here in the Sustainable Hour. That's how we feel, anyway. And let's talk about all the good news that are happening. For instance, on the plastic bag thing, which we've talked a lot about, there's some great news there. We'll keep them for a little bit later. Speaking of the Adani thing, you know, the big coal mine that we talked about, there's also some news there. There's an event that's going to take place here in Geelong on the 21st of November. Generations Against Adani, in a way, coming to Geelong. That'll be interesting. We'll talk about that later as well. But for now, let's talk about recycling, because the National Recycling Week is coming up. And what does that mean? Let's talk about waste and be very tangible and practical and everything. But before all that, we should also mention a big news, certainly in my world, the council election. The results are out. Rusty, what do you think? We have a new council. We have new councillors. And I have to say, well, Mick here is not one of them. We were 18 contesting in the Brownville ward and only 3 seats in council. But I must say, if I can say something to begin with, I think the 3 who got in really deserved it. They worked hard. They had 10 times more people working than I had. For instance, I had 2. They had, you know, 10 or 20. They had 10 times as much money because they were backed by political parties and so on. But they also really were on the streets. They were talking, they were out there, they were doing work. So congratulations to the 3 winners. And one of them, and I think we noticed that in particular here in the Sustainable Hour, is from the Greens. So for the first time ever, we now have a member of the Greens in council. Hooray!
Yep.
That's what I say.
Sarah will be an outstanding councillor, I have no doubts about that.
Exactly. She spoke beautifully during the, you know, the different forums that we had. She really was articulate and sober. You know, I was talking about progress done properly. And she's a woman who really speaks properly for herself. Rusty, what's your analysis?
I think what we got dealt was 11 cards. And that's the cards we have to work with. Mm. And
well, in a way, you know, they reflect the community, don't they? This is a democracy. That's my really genuine feeling about this, because, you know, we have 3 people there who definitely have said that they're not pro the clever, creative future vision. And then we have, and this is the good news in the Sustainable Hour, we have 6 councillors who've already stated in this survey that Geelong Sustainability did that they are pro this 30-year vision. So we, with 6 councillors having said that they're fully committed to the 30-year vision, the clever, creative vision, that means that we have a majority in council already. You know, that's Sarah Mansfield, that's Stephanie Asher, Jim Mason, these 3 are the obvious ones. But also it's Bruce Harwood, it's Peter Murray here, and Trent Sullivan from the Bellarine.
Yes.
You know, so these 6 have said, we are fully committed to this vision. Which is, you know, the big question in my mind, and what I have been campaigning for, is to say we need to put that vision up front, and we need to have a new council that will commit to that. So that's going to happen. We don't know about the others because they didn't answer. But I'm sure, I have the impression that Anthony Aitken from the Windermere and Pat Murthain from Cardinia are also going to be positive once they understand what this vision is about. You know, I don't even think they've read it. And then there's three, well, I'm not so sure what they're going to say. But the point being, Geelong is on track.
Well, the point is that six is a majority vote.
Yeah, yeah. And I think that the spirit is, there's a good spirit in the new council. Because already in the election campaign, there was a very sort of polite and good spirit. We were very, very friendly towards each other, all of us, even helping each other. You know, so I really get a good sense that this was a good outcome.
Yeah, I think it seems fairly balanced. And as I said to one of the candidates yesterday, proposed councillor yesterday, he is very keen to put meat on the bone of the 30-year plan. It needs to be broken down into segments that we can work with, but let's put the meat on the bones and apply the resources to make sure they are the outcomes.
Mm. What I have noticed, one new councillor standing out a little bit on Facebook, there was one person who commented on my Facebook page saying, I read that Sarah Mansfield, Greens candidate, got in. So, there is a sustainable voice in the council. And then, Stephanie Asher steps in. She's in America at the moment, but she steps in and she says, more than one. So, Stephanie Asher is certainly making her mark there, and she actually wrote, she was writing about that she's cycling around in America where she is at the moment, or maybe coming back from LA right now, but she wrote, we hired these Hulu bikes to get around, and we need these in Geelong, she wrote, and specific bike lanes too, like we now have in Mallop Street, so easy to get around. So there we have a new councillor who is pro-bike lanes. That's good news.
It is, definitely. Yeah, and an active cyclist as well, so we'll understand the needs of cyclists.
Exactly.
And the problems that they face currently.
Which beautifully leads into that we have a guest in the studio today from City of Greater Geelong. And you're from the Waste Services. Welcome to Darby Monroe.
Thank you very much.
You are an education officer when it comes to these matters of waste. What does that mean?
Yes, it means that you're informing people about the different things that can go into recycling bins and the proper way to recycle.
And informing people, is that school children or is it...
No, it's residents, right? Because there's a lot of confusion about recycling, and in particular there's a lot of confusion about plastics.
Hmm.
But it's very simple. It's about soft plastics and hard plastics. Years ago it was all about the numbers. So you'd look for a number on a container and it'd have a 1 or a 2 or a 3, and that's how we were told to recycle. But the numbers don't actually refer to recycling. They refer to the type of plastic it is. So with all the confusion, it's a very simple solution. If it's a hard plastic and it holds its shape like an ice cream container or a margarine container, it goes in the recycling bin. But if it's a soft plastic like Glad wrap or the bread containers, they can be recycled, but not through your recycling bin. They go to your Coles or Woolworths stores. And that's all done through RedCycle.
What's that called? RedCycle?
RedCycle.
Okay.
So they take all the soft plastics.
Okay. Yeah, so I have with me here some questions for you.
Yes.
We can't show them to our listeners, but you can...
Oh, this is great.
you can hear them.
We can take some photos.
we'll put it out for the podcast with some photos and stuff. Because I must say, I want to be a conscious recycler.
Yes.
And I still have questions. And I must say, I have been on your website trying to figure it out. And I have been asking around, but there's different stories. Now, the first story, which I'm confused about, is the word contamination.
Yes.
Because I hear again and again, be careful, be careful. If you put stuff where there's a bit of food inside, then it will contaminate not only your bin, but the entire truck will have to be put to landfill instead of being recycled. So that sounds, do I have to wash everything?
No, you don't have to wash everything. In the past, that was the practice, but things change over time. And so now, all you have to do is scrape it clean. Now, if it's a fruit juice container or a milk container, you just make sure it's empty. You don't want any liquids going into your recycling bins. And if you've got your tuna tuna can.
Exactly.
Okay.
Yeah.
People put that in the rubbish bin, right? And that's a waste, right? All you need to do is scrape it clean and it can go in the recycling bin.
And even with some small pieces of tuna and a bit of oil.
Well, the most of it, yes.
Yeah. Okay. So what actually happens to it once it gets to your end?
Once it's collected,
yeah.
Right, all the recycling goes to South Geelong, where it's sorted into the different products, so plastics, glasses, and all that sort of thing. And then it's either shipped, it's sorted in South Geelong, and then it goes to Melbourne, and it will go to a recycler in Australia, or it'll be shipped overseas.
Really? But is it washed? Or how do you get the tuna out? You know, that tuna and oil that I left?
Well, that would go through the sorting process and the cleaning process.
Oh, okay. With this, for instance, I have here a juice container.
Yep.
There's no sign on it for recycling.
No.
They didn't bother to put that on.
And
but even so, I'm okay with putting it in recycling?
Absolutely, absolutely. You go back because we get a lot of imported, for example, bottled water. It doesn't have a recycling symbol on it. So we go back to once again. Will it, if you crunch it up, will it hold its shape? And something like a milk container will hold its shape. So it goes into the recycling bin.
And
so
what about the top, which is plastic? You know, there's a screw thing here.
Just keep it on the lid. Keep it on the lid.
Really?
Yes.
So they're called Tetra Paks, is that
Tetra
is that
Paks
right?
Are fine because they're classified as a paper and they're accepted by the paper mills as paper.
Oh.
And that's part of the issue too, is that it needs to be accepted before it can be recycled.
Now, this is the Sustainable Hour, so we're talking here with experts and we are also having listeners who want to be experts.
Sure.
So I have some very small items here that are questions. You know, when
you've
opened your beer bottle, and obviously the bottle can go for recycling. But what about the little top here, this little piece of metal?
Yes.
Does that go for recycling?
Yes, it does.
Oh, really?
Because it's metal, yes.
And I shouldn't be collecting it in a special jar or something?
No, it can just go in your recycling bin.
Just on its own, the little thing. And something even tinier, you know, when you open one of these plastic bags with bread in, they have this little hard piece of plastic that holds the where you open the bag.
Yes.
And you can close it again.
Yes.
They're tiny, but there's a lot of them because, you know, in a family of five, we eat a lot of bread.
Yes.
So are they for the bin or are they for recycling?
They can be recycled, yes.
Yeah? Okay. So you can sort something as small as this?
You can.
Okay.
You're getting a pretty good success rate here, Mick.
Yeah.
High proportion of getting right.
Yeah, that's right. Another thing, you know, often we have just, you know, a little piece of paper, just a single piece, like, or a piece of a newspaper or something. And it's not like, you know, very impressive or anything, but is it worth it even to put it in the recycling?
Absolutely.
It's not just,
absolutely, yes. If it's clean, it goes in the recycling bin.
Okay. So there's no limit to how small things could be?
No.
Okay. That's
One of the other confusing things is the old aerosol can. It is a perfect recycling product. And a lot of people are confused about it because they think it might blow up. But as long as it's empty, it can go in the recycling bin.
But one thing that I learned from the ABC program, War on Waste, that doesn't go in the recycling, are these coffee cups that you get many places. Because there's something, what is the explanation?
There's a plastic inside, yes.
Yeah.
And one of the issues with coffee cups is identifying what is recyclable and what's not. So if you had a recyclable coffee cup and it was green, so it was different to everything else, that might make it a little bit easier to sort.
Aye, the colour, if there was some sort of a code.
Yeah.
Ah, that could be done, couldn't it?
Yeah, it would be,
yeah.
Could be, yes.
Yeah. So we have to sort of make some pressure there on the manufacturers. That make a system that makes it recognisable which one is a good one and which one is a bad one.
And the other thing about it is, you can just take a cup, a mug to get your coffee. Yes.
Which I notice a lot of people are beginning to do because they save 50 cents as well, don't they?
Yes, and it saves the coffee cups going to the landfill.
I reckon that will be the best way to get the manufacturers of those disposable, so-called disposable cups to come to the party.
Yes.
When enough people take their own containers.
Yeah,
and
they
it's
realize.
It's not hard once you get used to it.
No, that's right.
But it's like shopping at Aldi, isn't it? You don't get any plastic bags at Aldi. You've got to take your own bag.
Mm.
So once you've been there, you can work it out.
Yeah.
And it's the same with the coffee cups.
Yeah.
You can get your travel mugs and so forth to take with you.
Yeah, so that plastic proposed single-use plastic bag ban in Victoria, you'd be happy with that one?
Yes, Tony? Absolutely.
Yeah.
It's because what we find with our recycling, we talked about contamination before. See, when it goes, if you put your recycling into a plastic bag and take it out and put it in your recycling bin, well, they can't open it at the recycling facility because of OH&S, okay? So that's one of the problems that we have with that.
Just to translate what you just said there,
yep.
So they can't open it because of fear of that there could be something inside that would damage
what's inside
them.
It. Yes. Yeah. So it's a safety issue.
Yeah.
So that goes to landfill. So there's a waste there. There's a double waste. There's the cost of doing that, and then there's the loss of that material.
Mm.
So what we ask people to do is put their recycling in their bin loose. And some of the things that we've been doing with our bin audit is when we see a bin with recycling in a plastic bag, we give them in their letterbox a reusable bag so that they can carry their recycling out, tip it into the bin, take the bag back inside.
Mm. Now, soft plastic. I have one here that's a bit crunchy too, so it makes a bit of noise.
Yes.
We have a lot of that in our home because, yes, you know, just from the supermarket shopping, you
yes
know, you buy some, in this case, some baby spinach, and it's wrapped in this stuff.
Yeah.
So you're saying bring that back to the supermarket, basically.
Take it to Coles.
Yeah. And there is a, luckily, on the back of this bag here, there is a website that they're writing about, and it's coles.com.au/, and then it's recycling at Coles, in one word.
Yes, and there's usually so bins at the front of their store that you can put them in.
Hmm. Yeah, I'm beginning to do that.
Yes.
So we have, by now, you know, as I'm learning, I think we have 5 different places where things are going. There's, first of all, the food scrap after we've just eaten, that goes to the chicken.
You go. You
know, and then there's some
perfect
that goes to the compost. That's number 2.
Yes.
And then there's, you know, the general waste where you don't know what to do with it. It must be just for the landfill. So that goes in that bin. And then there's the recycling bin, the stuff that goes out in the yellow one.
Yes.
And then there's the soft plastic,
yes,
which has a 5th place.
Yes.
So that's how we do it in our house now. This
very
has
good
come as a journey of half a year of just listening and beginning to understand. But it doesn't
finding
come overnight.
Out. No, and asking the questions.
Yeah.
See, that plastic bag that you've got, you crunched it up. Everybody heard that. So it doesn't hold its shape. So it's not solid, is it?
No.
So it doesn't go in the recycling bin, but it can be recycled.
Yeah.
Darby, those little punnets you get, strawberries and blueberries, are they considered, like they're soft, but are they considered hard plastic? Or?
Yes, they're hard plastic.
Yeah, okay.
So they go in the recycling bin. The other thing is the meat tray.
Yeah.
A little while ago, it used to be the polystyrene meat tray. Now they've brought out sort of the plastic meat tray. So you remove the film, and the meat tray, without the meat, can go into the recycling bin.
Yep.
But the polystyrene one cannot.
No. Is that about the only thing that can't be recycled?
Polystyrene.
Yeah.
It can be recycled, but not through the recycling bin.
Okay, so how do we get rid of that if we have
Well, it's
that?
Like packaging. Right, polystyrene packaging. You've just bought the big TV, and you've got all this packaging, and they didn't take it away. They just left it there for you. You can drop that off at our Duro Street transfer station at no cost. So that's where your polystyrene goes. And if you go onto the website and you look at the transfer stations, you find a whole range of things that can be recycled for free.
Yeah, you mentioned an audit before,
yes,
of the waste. Just
yes,
can you take our listeners through that a bit?
Sure. Because we have about 2 years ago a high level of contamination in both our green waste and our recycling, and what we found is that plastic bags were the main culprit. So we introduced a process where we would look at bins as they've been emptied. And part of that process beforehand, before we do the bin audits, is to go around to the area that we're going to work in and let people know. So we do a letterbox drop saying, this is what we're doing and this is why we're doing it. And then what happens is we follow the truck as it does its rounds and empties the bins. And that's when we can see what's falling out. So, for example, let's imagine that I put plastic in it. Well, that would come up through the camera. And so I would get a sticker on my bin, which tells me that please keep plastic out, with a little bit of education saying, well, this is what happens to your recycling. It's made into other products, and the same with the green waste too.
Hmm.
So what we've done is get a sticker. So we might have done 1,000 bins, and 100 people got stickers. So 2 weeks later, we go around and we focus on those 100. And the amazing thing is that, let's say, out of that 100, about 90% go, oh, okay, yeah, and their bins are plastic bag free the next time around.
Yeah.
And then about 2 months later, we do that area again to see if it's standing up. And what we find is it is standing up. People get the message.
Mm. Education.
Yeah. But we're talking to the people who we need to talk to.
This was clear already when I watched this War on Waste series. It was really popular. I think millions of Australians watched it. And did you hear the news just yesterday? War on Waste, the ABC TV series there, has won the most prestigious sustainability honour in Australia, which is the Gold Banksia. Sustainability Award. So that shows, you know, there's some credibility in waste. And congratulations to your sector, in a way.
And the War on Waste returns on the 3rd of December for Part 4.
Ah, does it?
Yes.
Ah.
And Mick, let's hope next year it's a war on climate like we've been asking for.
That's right. There's some work to do in that space, exactly. Now, but did you feel any effect of this in your work?
Yes.
War on Waste, has that sort
absolutely.
Of helped you in your
absolutely.
Work?
Absolutely. We linked it and we put it on our website because it's a great resource. We'd like to see more Victorian content, so that might happen in the next episode.
Okay.
But it has been a spike, if you like, and it's got people talking and thinking.
Yeah, because what this guy who was doing it was able to, he had a bit of humor, and he was very practical, you know, sometimes like when he read the stack of clothes and different things, where it becomes very visible and again tangible. Plus that he got neighbors to talk together, they were competing and looking in these other bins and all that.
That's right.
It was interesting.
Now, if you're confused about something that you don't know where it goes, we've developed on our website a little Google search. So you just type in the product. It might be milk containers. And it'll tell you what to do with them.
Ah.
And it's not only household products, but as I get queries about what do I do with keys, what do I do with this, what do I do with that.
Well, that's a good question. What do you do with keys?
Well, you can put them in the recycling bin.
Okay, good.
Yes. So I didn't know that. So what I do is I ask the recycler, do you accept these? And they will say yes or no.
Mm.
And if they do, what I put that on the website as as another entry, and this is a directory that keeps growing.
Yeah, yeah. And what's the website then?
The City of Greater Geelong. So it's geelongaustralia.com, and then you would just go to the recycling page.
Okay.
Yeah.
There's a link from the front page?
Yes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Cool.
You just go to bins and away you go.
Hmm.
So any plans for the recycling week, Darby? I guess it's the start of it in a way.
Yes, we have a mattress offer which runs in November where people can drop off their mattress for $10. It's normally $23, and we like to recycle mattresses because they take up a lot of space and there's bits that you can use again. So normally we would have maybe 300 to 400 mattresses go through our transfer stations in a normal month. When we do the mattress offer, it goes from about 1,600 to about 2,000.
Yeah. Where do they go? Is there somewhere in Geelong?
Because
we'd like to have a chat with them.
Yes, they go to the Geelong Resource Recovery Centre in Duro Street, North Geelong.
Hmm.
Or Drysdale.
Someone asked me, because they had they were going to exchange, you know, the mattresses had just gotten too old, and they were saying, so can we put them up, you know, on the attic and use them as insulation? Is that a way of recycling mattresses?
Could be, but I'm not an insulator.
No, I mean, there might be some fire danger, wouldn't there? You know, because normally the insulation that you put in the house is something that can't burn. But mattresses certainly can.
Yeah, I think with insulation it was more the problem of having those lights up there,
as well.
They generate a bit of heat. What help me out here?
You know, they don't. If you have a modern home, that's now you're being old-fashioned, because in a modern home you have LED lights and they don't generate heat.
No, that's fine. But the fires have been caused have happened in the roof. Any fire that's happened with insulation has been because of those halogen downlights.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
And so it's not if it was insulation was put there by people that weren't properly trained, and that's why fires happened up there.
The people are far better returning the mattresses to a proper resource centre, because what they do is they cut the flock off, and inside is the metal springs, yes, which can be recycled, and the, yes, flock has a reuse. And, yes, there are a number of people in Melbourne, and they do come down to Geelong to take that product. So it's probably a safer way.
Yeah. Absolutely.
They're specialist recyclers in, yes, that area.
Yes, and we're also trialling a DVD and CD recycling program. So we've set up little bins at most of our customer service centres. And GT Recycling just had it at Moolap. They take those and they recycle them.
Yeah. Now, I know people, myself included, that have ripped the flock out of a mattress and use the base for for a trellis.
Oh, yeah.
If we were to do that, is the flock? What would I do with that, say, in Geelong now? Do I keep it and find out where, or have a chat to Rusty about where that goes?
Yeah, and have a talk to Rusty about that.
We'll do that.
The mattress recycler in Geelong is the person that looks after our recycling of mattresses.
Yeah, so they might take that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I think they use it as underlay or something like that.
Yeah.
For
so
carpets.
What's the, just for our listeners and for myself, the name of the company, have you got that handy, Dave?
The mattress recycler.
Yeah.
And during November, you can actually have it picked up for $15. So you can drop it off for $10. Or make the phone call and get it for 15.
Yeah. Oh, as well. That's a good one.
Well, it's difficult, isn't it? Mm.
Unless they don't fit in a normal car.
They can be.
No, you put it on the roof like Mr. Bean. tie it through the door.
Yeah, the mattress recycler is at Moolap, and they're 5248-2227.
Perfect.
Okay, we'll get that down and put that on the podcast, Mick, you think?
Mm.
Yeah.
We should mention that this morning we received no less than two different great press releases from City of Greater Geelong. And the one of them was, I thought, wow, something is going on here, because now our region and City of Greater Geelong is the driver in this collaboration that's going on here, is striving to be nationally and internationally recognized as a leader in sustainability. This came out as a press release. Wow, congratulations to the Waste Department as well, because you're certainly a part of that.
Well, they'd be the environment part. Yes.
Yeah. But
take
still,
care of everything.
No. But still, you know, it's all connected. And you certainly have, if this is true and if it comes true, it just means more work to your department.
Good too, isn't it?
So, but you have a lot of flyers and different things with you here. So what's the most important message if we're to round off this talk about recycling, and if people are going to tune into the Recycling Week, what should they be focused on in the coming week and in the time to come? Which flyers are most important? What's your the core of your message to people?
The core of the message is to go online and check out all the recycling options for all sorts of different things. What can you take to the transfer station? What goes in, you know, mobile muster? How do I get rid of my mobile phone? You use mobile muster. So you look at all these different outlets, all these options that are available through council or through organisations like Mobile Muster.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Yeah. And you have a newsletter, don't you?
Yes.
So how do people subscribe? They go to the same place?
They go to the Geelong Australia website, and it's a Rethink Your Rubbish, and it comes out monthly, usually in the first week.
Hmm.
And the next edition comes out in early December.
I guess ultimately the aim is to have very little going to landfill.
Ideally.
And we can help with that by what we buy, really.
Absolutely. Yeah. Recycling starts at the supermarket.
Yeah.
Hmm.
Terrific. That's a good one.
Darby Monroe, that's great to talk to City of Greater Geelong directly like this and getting all this tip and information. We need that. Thank you very much for this update and making us more clever.
Thank you very much for the
we'll
opportunity.
We'll try and be creative on our behalf, you know, in the ways that we deal with all this, so that we have empty, you know, basically the goal is to have empty bins and just recycle everything here, especially now that we have the National Recycle Week coming up. And did you know that, for instance, next year, I heard rumors just today on Facebook that there will be something called Geelong Zero Waste. I'm not sure exactly what it contains, but we'll have to talk to Geelong Sustainability about that. And if you're interested in getting involved in that, send an email or go to Facebook and find Geelong Sustainability. They have a website as well for Geelong Zero Waste. But for now, thank you very much to Darby Monroe.
Thanks, Darby. And I hope you, if you ever have any announcement, for Geelong people about recycling or waste generally, feel free to use us as a platform.
Absolutely. Thank you very much.
The Sustainable Hour.
So, Tony, you were attending something that had to do with climate change indirectly, the whole thing about the Adani coal mine. We talked about it in the beginning. And you talked to Bruce Curry, a farmer from Queensland. Just to give us a brief introduction.
Yeah, I met Bruce initially a couple of years ago when I took leave from the Sustainable Hour to head up on a road trip. Lovely couple. Him and his partner, his wife, Annette, have got a place. It's a big station, quite close to a proposed coal mine, and they showed us, like, they've been fighting for years. They went to, I think Bruce covers it, so I won't say a whole lot more, but just lovely people, just soul of the earth. And Bruce is an independent candidate for the Queensland election, which is going to be in a couple of weeks. So yeah, let's have a listen to him.
Our property is located in central west Queensland, north of the township of Jericho. It's an extensive beef operation, and we join the western side of the Galilee Basin. And two of the mines that are going to very heavily impact on us are Kevin's Corner and also the Alpha Mine. And we've only just heard today that the Kevin's Corner mine has looked like it's got its go-ahead, and our concerns are based around groundwater impacts. And when people consider the amount of Queensland that's covered by groundwater tenements, these impacts are going to impact on a vast majority of our state, a number of people in our state. So it's not just us. We're fighting actually for the rights of the people in our state to protect their groundwater supplies.
You're down in Victoria. What's the point in that? What do you hope to achieve? And what have you done since you've been here, and what do you hope to achieve from it?
Well, we're very grateful. We both got an invite to come down and share our story with the Stop Adani movement down here, because right from the start, once we knew we were going to be impacted, we decided to fight it. But the trouble we found is the more we fought it, the more we came across the realisation of the amount of corruption and dishonesty and rhetoric that the proponents of the mining sector are peddling out to the community at large. And we took it on our own shoulders, I guess, to keep telling the story and inform people of what's really happening out there. And also, we wanted to stand up for other people who could be in a more financial, either emotional or financial state. And if this sort of legislation and treatment of people keeps going, there will be suicides and there's going to be an increase in domestic violence. So it's not just the impacts of groundwater, it's also that all the flow-on effects that the government, their actual legislation is failing to protect people, and it's destroying people's lives.
Why do you think that the governments are so keen on it going ahead? Like, all the science is telling us that it's crazy. Like, fossil fuel projects have got to be stopped, and yet we're going gangbusters on them. Do you have any understanding of that? Where
Tony,
they're coming from?
I've got no real understanding. I guess we could all take a guess and think about different Four Corners programs that have indicated politicians that are in the "you scratch my back, I'll scratch your back" industry. And, you know, we saw that with the sale of the Port of Darwin. But yeah, I guess our focus is really trying to concentrate on the things that we know, we're aware of. We've got concrete evidence that this is what's happening, and why governments, whether that's local, state and even national, are embracing some of these companies and their projects. It really bewilders me, because, for argument's sake, in March I went to India to have a look at the Adani operation for myself and try and understand what's happening and why they would approve a company with such a questionable reputation to be politically and legally correct. And it's bewildering why they would even embrace this company to do an operation. And it's also an operation that's in a dying industry, and while it does continue on, it's a destructive industry. So I think it's very short-sighted to keep mining coal, and also, if we do it, we're placing local and state and national economies in a very vulnerable state, because if the global community decides to put a cost on carbon emissions, it's going to basically collapse our economy.
Yeah, well, it's inevitable that will happen, even though our governments are of various persuasions are resisting it. Yeah. It's happening all over the place.
Yes.
We've got to give a disincentive to keep using carbon-intensive industries. So, that goes with it. Now, I hope this isn't any offence to the Irish, but I reckon you must have a bit of Irish in you because you believed in this so strongly that you defended yourself in the Land Court in Brisbane. Right. So first of all, do you have any Irish?
Scotch
is that's worse. So tell us about that. How did that happen?
Well, Tony, just briefly, I guess you asked me about my Irish heritage, and it is Scottish. And I guess if you look back through history, we learned about the inspiration that I think wasn't it King Bruce got from watching a spider build his web in a cage and in a cave and. That was enough to motivate him to fight whatever foe he was going to meet. So I guess that draws a long straw. But right at the start, I'm just very grateful that I've got a very determined and supportive wife, and also the same with my children. And I guess at the crux of things is loving your country is a bit like loving your family, your wife and your children. Like, you never stop doing it. Even you go to your grave doing it. So that really was the ultimate driving. It wasn't the only, but that was the ultimate driving force in this whole equation, is that what sort of a parent am I, and what sort of a legacy is my generation handing on to the next generation? And if we don't give them a future that's got... We don't give them an optimistic future and somewhere to go with their life and a better future than what we're looking at now, I've failed my children.
And your main argument there was about the destruction of the aquifer?
It's about destruction of water supply. So as unromantic as it is, unless you say go skinny dipping in a dam, you know, groundwater is a very boring subject, but it's the most vital element to mankind. Without water, we don't exist. And when we know that over half the world's population doesn't have access to clean water supplies, we live in the driest inhabited continent on Earth. Where's the logic in doing the destructive practices that we're doing? In our court case situations, that was the only certainty that the mining companies and the researchers could say us, is that whatever water supplies they impact in the process of mining will be destroyed for perpetuity. So we are actually subsidising these ventures for perpetuity. They talk about the subsidisation going to the clean energy producers. It is nothing. It's only pittance compared to the subsidisation we're giving the fossil fuel industry. The destruction of local economies, the destruction of groundwater supplies, the fossil fuel, the mining companies don't even have to do real-time monitoring of air quality. And when we hear about the impacts that miners are suffering with black lung disease, that's just not just going to be miners, that's also communities and landowners. We are very treading in a very destructive environment. The conditions and the destruction of people's water supplies and the pollution and the contamination of people's air, if this was happening in Syria, they would be calling it war crimes against humanity. Mm. I mean, that's probably... People might see that as an extreme statement. But when you're sitting in your shower tonight and you turn the tap on, if you've got no water, you'd panic. If you turn that water on and it's contaminated, you don't know what's impacting on your body. And up in our area, we're calling it an environmental genocide. It is crucial. And I think the likes of the national government, the federal government, they haven't seen anything yet when it comes to the crash of their popularity. But the trouble is, we haven't found... It's like Queensland state government. We haven't found a viable alternative yet, except that people start voting independent.
Yep. Yeah, and on that note, I understand that you're standing in the recently announced election in Queensland as an independent?
That's correct, Tony. This is the third time I'm standing, and people say, well, when you stood the first time and lost, why'd you go around for seconds? But it's like I'm passionate about my industry. I love my family and I love my children and I love my country. I mean, it might be emotional to some people, but when people look at their own inner self, what drives you? And that's what motivates me. I've got no burning desire to be the so-called professional politician, but I think I've reached that stage of life where I want to give something back to my community. And that's going to be honesty and integrity.
Yeah, and it's only about a month, or less than a month until it's hell. Was that unexpected?
It was very unexpected, but like they're saying up there, all Anastasia Palaszczuk had to do was wait until Adani told her that she could have the election, and she went ahead then.
Yeah. Now, in Victoria, there's lots of people concerned about what happens if this project goes ahead. How can our listeners support you?
I think there's a few ways you can support. Unfortunately, we're located in an area that's got limited mobile phone coverage, and so we've got a bit of restricted access to the social media and technology. But please, if you scan it, we are working on a website, and if you Google Bruce Curry, you will come across me. Also, Australia, we are one big family, and even though people live in Victoria, you will have friends, family that live up in the Gregory electorate. That's the electorate I'm in. So if you get this information or you see something that you are concerned about, with the power of electronic and the social media, flick it onto them. And because what we do in Queensland will impact on Victoria, and what you do down here impacts on us. But together, we can make it better. You look at an issue when it comes up and think, is this making a sustainable society for us, for my family? If it is, support it. If it's not, you better question it and think hard about it, because it's going to impact on all of us.
The Sustainable Hour.
We should mention that if you want to support Bruce, as you heard speaking here, great interview, Tony, thanks for that, then be aware that on the 21st of November, there is a Generations Against Adani shake-up action event happening here in Geelong, where people are getting together in front of Richard Marles' office, in a way, I think, to escalate some pressure on one of our elected representatives here, because the Stop Adani group, the local Geelong Stop Adani group, had a meeting with Richard Marles where he was all talking about the science of climate and he understood everything and they shook hands and were smiling and happy. But then he sends this letter to them afterwards confirming the meeting that they had had, where he basically just told them, you know, the same crap that we hear. To be honest, I'm sorry to use that word, but it what the official policy of the Labour Party is, or maybe I should say was, because it seems to be changing right now, but which is that, oh, well, if this mine stacks up environmentally, then we're not going to stop it. That's the official policy. So he sent a letter like that. And that's simply not good enough. A mine like that, at a time like this, can never, never, ever stack up environmentally. It's just not an option. So people, and that's not just people, that's families, students, grandparents, anyone here in Geelong, and especially those young at heart who think that they want to have a future in this country, come on the 21st of November in front of Richard Marles' office. Yep. It's at 11 a.m., so it's in the middle of the day, so those who are in school maybe can't come, but younger kids can come, and maybe some high school kids could take an hour off there and come down. It'll be a fun event, and there'll be activities for kids as well, so it's not like, you know, going to be with police and something dangerous. It's going to be a fun thing, but it is about getting together and telling at least Richard Marles, he needs to understand that we need a better answer from him and from his party. It's just not good enough. But things are changing. We're seeing there was a statement this Friday from the Premier of Queensland who suddenly turns around and says, oh, I'm not going to support this big $1 billion loan anymore, and our government is not either. Because as it turns out, and this is the way it got, I didn't even know that. You know, it turns out her husband has been helping Adani with the application. Oh, wow. So that is, you know, what's going on behind the scenes. Well, there you go. Enough about it, Danny, but mark 21st of November, 11 a.m., and it's in the middle of the city. It's Yarra Street, 17A Yarra Street, 11 a.m. on the 21st of November.
And that's part of the, as Mick mentioned, the national shake-up about Adani, so there'll be that week.
Exactly.
There'll be hundreds of actions all over the country.
Exactly. Now, to round off on a really good foot, we've talked about recycling, and we've had all this advice about what we do with our plastic and so on. There is news on the plastic scene, and we have been talking in particular over the years, I think, with someone who has advocated and worked and lobbied and done a lot of great work in this space when it comes to the plastic ban, or getting a ban on plastic. Robert Skian,
Yeah, Mick, how are you?
I'm good. And really happy to hear about the news, what's happening on the plastic, the single-use plastic bags scene. Can you tell us about it?
Yeah, look, we're not quite over the line yet.
Oh, really?
There's a, you know, the state government or the Premier, Mr. Andrews, has announced an intention to introduce a ban, which is a really good first step. Although, you know, Labor did the same thing about 10 years ago. They announced an intention to put in place a ban on single-use plastic bags, which didn't quite come to fruition. We're certainly hopeful that the current announcement will lead to a much better outcome, and we're fairly optimistic about that because, you know, with the two major supermarkets and a bunch of minor supermarkets getting on board with an intention to not provide the lightweight bags anymore, then yeah, pretty much most of the heavy lifting's been done for the government by the market.
That's interesting because, you know, social media, we talk a lot about fake news and all that. So, because I really, from social media, I got the impression that now we had a ban. So that was an exaggeration.
No, okay. There's actually an online consultation process going on at the moment. So there's the opportunity for communities to tell the government what they think this ban should look like, and indeed to be able to tell the government what other actions they think that should be taken to, as I like to say, turn the tide on plastic pollution. So they have opened the conversation up, which is great, and hopefully they listen to what I believe will be, you know, overwhelming answers that things have to change. And it's not just plastic bags, it's, you know, container deposit legislation, it's action on things like microfibers in our clothing, it's things like microbeads in, you know, cosmetics and toothpaste and things like that. And it's packaging, all these plastic items that are, you know, generally avoidable and are causing such challenges within the environment, both on land and in our oceans.
Robert Skeens, thank you for letting us know about this. We'll put the link out on our Facebook page and on our blog on climatesafety.info so people can go and help with this survey. We'll have to end here. Thanks for telling us this, Robert, and we'll come back to you to hear more. All for now, boys, what do you say?
Be the change.
This is the news on 94.7 The Pulse.